Welcome to the Beer Healer Interviews. I am your host, Chris Lukianenko, and I scour this big brand land of ours, looking under fermenters and behind mash tuns to find the best beer stories to share with you. The Beer Healer Interviews is now available on all major podcast services. If you like the show and want to help out, can I ask you to simply rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or your preferred podcast service? Just leave a few words and a rating and the podcast gods will do the rest. By doing this, you'll help others to discover the show more easily and hopefully get more people interested in this great industry that we call craft beer. If you're listening to this podcast, I'm going to go out on a limb and suggest that you believe that craft beer is good, maybe even great. But do you also believe that craft beer can do good? Many members of the public, and I'm not going to name the organisations that push this agenda, they believe that craft beer, by way of being a form of alcohol, is nothing but bad news. Tonight, with the help of my guest, I'm hoping to challenge and even disprove that notion that craft beer is bad in any way. I believe that craft beer is good and can do good. Sorry for that sounding like an opening argument for a grade 8 school debate. It is what it is. And now to welcome to the stage the second member of the affirmative team from a brewery that is doing all it can to spread craft beer goodness, Hugo Mylakarain from the local Brewing Co. Welcome aboard, Hugo.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. You have framed that that very well. I don't think we've ever had ourselves introduced like that, but we couldn't agree more wholeheartedly.
Were you a debater back in the day?
Look, I tried, mate. I tried.
Did you really?
I failed. I thought it was something that I felt would be good to be good at. That would be useful. And then I just crumbled. Like, got up in front of people who were future lawyers, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And they just tore my argument to shreds and my self-confidence with it, mate.
My whole issue was, I'm a bit of a talker, so I can get up on a stage and I can have a chat, do all that sort of thing. I hated the fact that I wasn't allowed to bloody interject and butt in and have a full-on back-and-forth argument about these things. I had to wait my turn for my thing and then only got the chance to reply. It was too structured for my liking, so I think I might have got to grade 5 and that was about it.
Your own platform, no one's going to interject. Yeah.
Do whatever the fuck I want on this thing. It's beautiful. I love it. We were just saying off the mic for people that are listening that Hugo and I met at Gab's last year when they had the big wheel and I was doing my bit of a roaming beer healer. It was only a very, very quick chat. And I think at that stage I said to you, gee, we must have a full episode. So it's taken this long to get to it. So I do apologize, mate, but life gets in the way.
Accepted, Chris. That's all right. We've had a bit going on as well. I think the world has as well in the last year.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. I'm with you. Now, look, this is a bit of a different story to some of the chats that I have on here because it's kind of like equal parts craft beer and equal parts social enterprise. Is that the right way to put it?
Yeah, I mean, that's not a bad way to introduce it. I guess we differ from most craft breweries in that a lot of these craft breweries start up or craft brands with a brewer front and center.
Yep.
Because beer is pretty important. If you're going to make a product, you probably should have someone making it front and center. But we're maybe the exception to the rule and proof that you don't have to have a brewer necessarily on board because we were nothing more than home brewers with a love for craft beer.
And so they've given me the lead dancer, have I, from a dance trip or something?
Wait till you see the moves on camera. Luckily, this is a podcast.
you don't have to be a brewer, but you're a home brewer, so you're part of the way there.
Well, part of the way. You haven't tasted our home brews, though, Chris. I mean, we upgraded from the Cooper's kit. Nothing against Cooper's, went to
somewhere.
You know, get the grain and the. And the hops from, I think they've closed down now, but on Church Street. And I've just blanked, I've forgotten the name, but we picked up some supplies there and then we thought we were pretty sophisticated at the time, but not really. And then there were a few gabs and a few more events that led us to question like, hey, what would be so hard about actually, you know, bottling this beer, putting a label on it and selling it? But the big thing in the way was I think we lacked the authenticity of a, you know, commercial brewer saying like, hey, this is something I've perfected. This is like all I'm about. And we were like, we want to have an angle partly, but we also, if we're going to start this, we want to have an impact. And yep. So very early on, from the time that we like first thought about starting this, which was originally with just five mates, nothing more, we were like, well, let's have a think about if we're going to make beer, what else can we do at the same time? So it was always hand in hand. It was like, let's make great beer, but how can it be something more than beer? How can it yep. like create change, drive change? And very early on, we connected with Second Bite. They are an organization that deals with food insecurity and food waste, and they do an amazing job of getting food from places where it would otherwise be wasted, thrown out, to the mouths of people who need it.
So I'll just cut you off there for one second. Not cut you off, I just want to interject. So, Mr. Speaker, if I can.
Point of order.
So you had an interesting beer, you wanted to do something good, and Second Bite came into the picture. If Second Bite hadn't come into the picture, would you have still been looking to do something along these lines, or was that so early on in the piece you thought, oh, great, this is an awesome fit for the overall big picture we want to achieve here?
Yeah, good question. I would like to think that if Second Bite had said, which they had, were totally entitled to do, you don't even have a product yet, what are you coming to us for? You've just got an idea. If they had said, look, thanks but no thanks, I would like to think we would have gone to a similar national-based charity that aligned with what we wanted to do, which was to have an impact at the kind of local level.
Yep.
Because we had ambitions to be a national company. I don't know if it was necessarily would have been in food insecurity. I mean, it tied in really well with us being a product that, you know, came from farms, and that we wanted to kind of be connected to that circular system. And today we are brewing beer with leftover fruit that would otherwise have been thrown out. So that fitted in really well. But it's like sliding doors. If Second Bite hadn't have said yes, then where would we be? And
I was sort of thinking, like, you know, in the overall, what do you have, like your hierarchy of needs or wants or whatever when you're starting a business? You got things like, you know, I just bloody love beer. I want to make money. I want to provide for my family. I want to do good for the community. I want to, you know, become a not-for-profit. You know, all these differing things. I just was wondering where your hierarchy sat. Was the fact that you wanted to, you know, do something good for others in the way that you are, was that really at the top of things, or were there a couple of you that maybe thought, we want to make some sweet cash?
cash definitely wasn't foremost, and if it was, we would be very disappointed.
This wasn't going to happen.
If you want to make money, I wouldn't recommend getting into the beer game. There are easier ways to make money, certainly. Yep. You get into it because you love beer. I don't think there was any conscious decision behind, like, are we beer focused first, or are we like doing good first? I think that we maybe naively thought that, why can't we be both? Like
the little girl from the taco out again. Two podcasts this week where we've brought up the taco girl.
Okay, that's just us. We honestly did. Well, it was more that like we can be a charity that sells beer. It was more, hey, let's be a fantastic beer company. Let's make great drinks that are accessible, that are flavorful, that we love, that we think the rest of Australia will love. Let's spread this like craft message to the rest of Australia, but let's make a difference doing it, because you know, we know that we're very privileged. We were five white guys who five white men, there's one female on board, but we have we've been very privileged, and we know that a lot of people in this country aren't, and we wanted to, have a beer that was fantastic, that was great, that was delicious, and also gave back to the community, to those less fortunate. And
It's hard enough when you get started to get a lot of brewers to, you know, think more broadly and write that marketing plan, business plan, all those sorts of things, you know, because often the enjoyment and the love of beer is the number one thing. You think, oh, I don't have to sit around and do that. But, you know, obviously it's very important. But did you want to make it any more difficult for yourselves? Because not only were you starting a whole new business, you've got sort of a weird way of getting the ingredients in some situations, and also partnering with a not-for-profit to become a charity yourself, or whatever the words are. It was a little bit more complex, wasn't it?
It was. But we also really had no idea what we were in for anyway. So like, it was all, as we like to say, building the plane as we flew it. So like we were learning how to be commercial brewers. We were learning how to run a business. None of us had like started a business or run a business at that time. So just run any business. We were dealing with logistics, with being sales. Like we had to go out on the road and sell this beer, right? But none of us had sales experience, certainly not in the, you know, the beer game. So it was rocking up to venues and I don't remember.
Could you please take a keg?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
I remember Chris and Sarah Daly from Beer 360, shout out to them. I rock up and they just ask the most basic question, well, are your prices including or excluding GST? Which is the most basic question that you could ever get asked as a salesperson. But I was like, let me check. Just feeling like, you know, the most underprepared, ignorant person walking into, and they supported us from day dot, and it was just trying to build up enough of those relationships. And we look, early on, we had enough nous, and I think coming from a more corporate-y, businessy side of things, we realized that if we were going to give away a percentage of profits, that was going to be really hard for us to grow the business. So there was some forethought of, if we commit to a certain amount of, in our case, it was a meal provided for every pack and pint that we sell, then that's a commitment that we're sending to Second Bite and we're already helping from, you know, day number one, as opposed to a percentage of profits where either we're not giving anything away if we're not profitable.
Oh, yes. Okay.
That like we're trying to work out like backdate how much profits we had and then give the money over. You know, we had a very simple metric, I guess, worked out, and it's served us very well in Second Bite to all the hard and amazing work for us, but we're very proud of that relationship we've built with them.
So how did that first beer come about? Take me back to when, you know, you've made these arrangements, you've met Second Bite. Who's going to brew it? Who's going to make the recipe? Like, what were you doing?
Who's going to make a beer for people who don't know how to brew beer? Yeah, good question. So, you know, very green. We researched some places that we thought would fit well. And around the corner from us was Collingwood, a venue called Craft & Co. We went in there. Heath at the time was the brewer and basically said, look, we've got, you know, a recipe, we've got a dream, we've got a potential relationship, and we want to make a beer. And at that point, we'd already worked out that this is about 4 years ago now, that Bolter's XBA had just like come onto the market, and we'd tried that and we're like, this beer is amazing. It perfectly like crosses that line between accessibility, between like flavor, craft, you know, everything you want a craft item to be, really. It had flavor, it had individuality.
You haven't got Sterling standing in the corner of your room feeding you these words, have you?
This is before they sold out. No, no, and we basically wanted to recreate, or not recreate, that's a bit, going a bit far. We wanted to put our own kind of stamp on something similar, to have our own space, and we thought that was the hot ticket item. It was a beer that we loved, so we wanted to develop something that was similar that we thought would capture the imagination of our friends and family as well.
Yep.
Because at that point, if you weren't in craft beer, XBA was still a really kind of unusual term. What's an XBA? What's the X stand for? Right, it was the number one question.
Yep. But it was close enough to other stuff you were drinking to be approachable. And then in the case of that one, just a really, really well-made beer. So you loved it once you'd tried it.
Well, that's the number one thing was the hop heads, the people who were drinking IPAs at the time would love it. But we wanted to be able to give a beer to our dads who were lager drinkers, maybe had tried a pale ale. We would give it to them and they would say, yeah, this is all right. I could drink a few of these. And that's where we wanted to sit. And I think that's where we still want to sit with our core range for sure.
Yeah, nice. So at Craft & Co., how did you make that happen?
we have to say thanks to Heath and Olmo, primarily, who were the brewers here who
yep.
basically scaled up this recipe into something of, you know, commercial quantities, and basically talked us through everything, because we were quite ignorant on exactly how, you know, the intricacies of, you know, hop additions and, you know, boil times and everything on a commercial scale would go. And we were there. We poured grain into kettles, and we we took some photos. We put it on our socials, and we said we've got a first beer underway. And I think of the first and second brews, every beer was hand packaged and hand labeled, which for a 1,000-liter brew in cans,
yeah.
Which is incredibly laborious and time consuming. And very early on, we realized if this was something that was going to be long term, we needed to get something that was more efficient.
Yep.
Especially when we've had our parents roped in to help us, and they're like, I'm not doing this again. You need to get something sorted out. I mean, you have to start from somewhere, don't you?
Yeah. And at that stage, it wasn't Local Brewing Co. It was a local beer from, was it the Melbourne Brewing Company?
We were just a local beer, yeah. So, local beer. I mean, it started, the name we thought was catchy. Like, we wanted to be somewhere that, you know, you would ask for a local beer at a bar, right? So why not call your company a local beer? That makes sense.
Yep.
And over the first year, we got a lot of, you know, recognition, a local beer. But as we kind of grew, we had to speak to more and more important people, like national sales managers of, you know, bottle shop chains and whatnot. And you'd ring up and say, oh, g'day, it's, you know, it's Hugo from a local beer. And they're like, which local beer? You're like, a local beer. And they're like, I don't, sorry, what are you, you know? And that we realized we were kind of missing this professionalism perhaps that was required with a national brand.
Yeah.
And so then we changed to Local Brewing Co. A year after that, and that's who we are today.
Sorry to interrupt, just a couple of things you can do if you want to help spread this craft beer gospel. First up, Apple Podcasts. If you've got it on your phone, find the Beer Healer interviews, scroll all the way down to the bottom, rate, review, subscribe. That's the best thing you can do to help me out. Other than that, whatever podcast player you listen to this on, follow me or subscribe to me on that one, and then also find me on Instagram and follow me there. Thanks for your help. Did things start to get bigger a little quicker than you planned? Like, you know, obviously you've got 1,000 liters, you know, hand canned, if you like, to you know, maybe 12 or 18 months later. Like, was it sort of a snowball that just kept rolling and rolling and rolling, and, you know, getting bigger very quickly?
Probably a good analogy. I don't think we had the experience or any really idea to know what might have been around the corner. And we always had, like, maybe kept in the back of our heads, we'll, you know, CUB are going to buy us out in like 5 years for X dollars. You know, that was the joke.
Yeah.
But we
like probably let's be honest, like half the blokes who started things up around, that was always part of the dream.
It was
always. I don't care what anybody says. There's always something in the back of your mind. Geez, I'd love to be like the blokes from Bolter or you know, whoever else before them or whatever. Like, because I don't care what anybody says. Like, we love beer, but we also love to think the fact that we might have to work for the rest of our lives or can do something I don't care what anyone says. It's always in the back of your mind, no matter what they say.
Yeah, yes.
Yeah. Let's be honest.
Yes, let's be honest. Yeah, we can't pretend.
No.
But then as this kind of, snowball group, we're like, well, hey, people love this beer. We probably need to create a second flavor, right, like a second beer. So we actually went to Bonehead. We did some recipe development for we always loved the Stone and Wood Pacific Ale.
Yep.
That was like the gateway beer for us and half of the country.
So
we want to do something similar that's a bit more summery, right? We're coming into summer again the next year. So then that's the next beer that comes along, and suddenly we're, you know, going to, you know, the BWSs and Coles, and, you know, things are getting pretty big. And then, I don't know if you've been following the news, Chris, but there's a like this virus that went around the world.
I thought you were setting me up there.
Kind of changed the landscape, mate. So,
so you were sort of in full tilt when that sort of sprung on us, weren't you?
Yeah.
That sucks.
Certainly put a stop. Look, we actually say if we were any bigger or smaller as a company, like we might not have survived. If we were any bigger, we probably would have had, you know, far more resources invested.
Yeah,
we might have had more
people
debt.
To pay potentially, or
right, another employee on. If we were any smaller, like we didn't have enough off-prem venues, bottle shops that had our stock that had us stocked, so there's no way to sell the beer. So we were at a point where we were able to tick over. Anyone in the industry will know that kegs is where you get your biggest margins from. Mm. So having all the pubs shut was tough, but we luckily had these bottle shops that were able to tick over enough that we could keep going. And
did you have national ranging? I think you mentioned B2S or Dan's earlier, didn't you? I think. Did you have national ranging with them?
At that point, I'm not sure if we did. Yeah, we may have actually. We were definitely in New South Wales at that time, and there were a few other maybe distributors or places that had us on in Adelaide, maybe Western Australia, but very, very small, very limited. Mm. But it was a very sad day. We went to the brewery and we basically had to pour out 40 kegs of beer or 30 kegs of beer, which... Yep. Everything up until that point, it hurt. And it's like not a huge amount in the context of our company, but at that time it was like our heart and soul have gone into like everything we've done in this company. It's like everything we've done up until that point was just us. You know, we weren't paying ourselves anything else. And
I did hear of some people at that stage around the traps maybe were able to get some stuff out of kegs into some cans and stuff, but I suppose you would have had to have a, you know, East Coast canning or someone like that sort of lined up and ready to rock and roll and probably fraught with danger as well. I don't know whether the coming out of the kegs into the cans is the best idea. I'm not really sure, but it seems a shame that you couldn't have saved any of it, even if just to have a party. Oh, you couldn't have a party. We're in lockdown.
Yeah, that was the problem. Bloody Melbourne. Blame Dictator Dan. Let's not get political. Look, we were looking at that, but the cost of doing that was like, well, we've already got this can stock anyway that we're not sure we can sell. We were looking to put them into growlers, but then growlers have got such a short shelf life anyway, so it's like like gift a growler, like buy a growler for a friend, but you're talking about one keg, you know, 50 litres at a time, and for the effort to go into like trying to get 50, you know, brown bottles like bottled and then sent out, it's like
a bit too hard. Especially with everything else going on around, you know, with things being locked down and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, like exactly.
Trying to organise that. Jeez. And then trying to get your bloody parents out to fill them. They've already said no, bastards. Well,
Malcolm Mitchell, I've shouted him out on the last podcast. He's famous. I don't think he's.
Oh, what are you saying? This is not your first. Oh, I thought I was your first, mate. Oh, jeez.
Exclusive. This isn't it. What other podcast?
So you've poured those things out. Then what did you do? Just like sit around, look at each other, and cry, or did you get on? Like,
no,
I can't comprehend what you were. You're not cryers?
We're not cryers, mate. We're doers. We're doers.
Fair enough. Okay.
I don't know. I feel we're rehashing the lockdown life in Melbourne, but it was like constantly like, hey, maybe we're coming out now. Maybe pubs are opening up. Like there was always that, all right, let's get out. Let's contact pubs again. And then there was like another lockdown on the horizon. Little did we know at the time.
I know exactly what you're saying. That sounds like every single party I went to as an 18-year-old. I think I'm going to find a girl tonight. Oh, yeah. No. Go home, lonely. And then next weekend.
Next weekend, Chris.
Ah, shit. So it was a real roller coaster then.
Yeah, it was. I mean, we were very fortunate that we weren't relying on, you know, too many paid employees, because it would have killed us to have to have, you know, cut in employees. It was just kind of us, and most of us were keeping our day jobs. Luckily, I was in tourism, which not a great industry to be in.
Jesus Christ. I'm in tourism and I'm also in food and bev. Wow. Don't you know how to pick a career?
Got the quinella for very COVID proof. But, you know, it meant some of us were able to spend more time in the company and on the company, which was, you know, perhaps a blessing in hindsight. But look, we got through it, and it's allowed us to be in a position today where, look, we've still got, you know, blue skies ahead of us. We'd like to think. Still got a PTSD about, like.
Did it? I've asked this of others in the past. Did COVID give you a chance, a forced opportunity maybe, to sort of have a look at your business model, who you're working with, how you're going to market and things like that, and say, okay, is this the right way? We've got no choice but to stop pretty much right now. Are we doing things the right way? Did you have some of those kind of discussions?
I think that was we were still figuring out exactly who we were anyway. So I guess that was still happening. It's interesting that those discussions, you know, are we a local beer? Now we're Local Brewing Co. We've just actually done a new marketing exercise. Shout out to Craft Instinct just to take us through, like,
Jesse Jungawala?
Yeah, yeah. Just, nice. She's on holiday in Canada, I think. So if you're listening to this from Canada, what are you doing? Go back to your holiday in Canada. To, you know, reevaluate, because things happen so quickly. The business kind of organically kind of just grows sometimes without any, like, conscious thought behind it, the day-to-day operations. So, yeah, I don't think we really had an opportunity to, like, stop, pause, think about exactly what we're doing, because the rest of the business was still kind of happening anyway. We're kind of doing that as we go.
And still going.
Still going.
As I said, like, you've got a fairly complex kind of sort of business setup with the way you operate. So I can't think of anybody that might have written a rule book for you to follow in terms of how to run this thing. So I guess that probably is only natural that you're going to keep sort of developing as you go along.
Are you saying we're trailblazers, Chris?
Oh, you are amazing. Yes, trailblazers. Trailblazers.
We'll claim it. No, I didn't say it, so you did.
So when you made that second beer, and now you've got three with the IPA as well in the core range, is that always going back to the same guys to help you create these recipes? Are you still brewing with them on a contract basis?
Yeah, good question. So we realized by the time, I guess, we got to our Pacific Paradise, it was then called, but Pacific Pale, that we were brewing more, or we needed to brew more beer than Craft & Co. could kind of allow. Yeah. So Bonehead, as I said, was the reason we kind of had recipe development with them for our second brew. From there, we were looking at more tank space, because it's a tough game if you're a contract brewer or a gypsy brewer to find tanks and to kind of lock them in. You might get some tank space, but then a few months later, especially anything coming into summer, since it's pre-COVID, it's a tough game. So we were shopping around, and Burnley Brewing, particularly Michael Stanzel, head brewer there, was able to help develop IPAs with us, or the West Coast IPA, and we were able to negotiate some kind of ongoing tank space with them. They're fantastic brewers. I've given them enough shout out in the last other inferior podcast that I've done, so I can't really mention them anymore in this podcast, Chris, because otherwise people are going to think they're paying us off to speak out on the podcast. But they do an amazing job. So at the moment, Burnley is where we do most of our contract brewing.
Yep.
But in more recent time, Hawkers has been where we've brewed our surplus sour, which is the beer that has kind of.
What a magnificent segue.
I was going to say.
It's like you're reading my mind. Because obviously you've spoken about the other beers, but obviously the surplus sour is the one that sort of has, you know, gained some notoriety just recently, because it's a really awesome idea of what you've done. I know you've done other sour beers along the way where I think they were called Fruits of Your Labor, which I'm assuming was a similar sort of idea, but this feels like it's taking it to the next level because of the people that you're working with. So tell everybody about how the surplus sour thing came together. So cool.
Yeah, well, it ties into exactly what we wanted to be as a brewer, and creating all these other core range beers are fantastic. We love beers, but again, we're tying back to what can we do to, you know, impact change, sustainable change elsewhere. And food waste, particularly from Second Bite and Coles, their relationship with Coles. We learned that bread is the number one food waste product in the country. I mean, you bake it every day. If it doesn't get sold, it gets thrown out. At the same time, there's fruit all over the country, just mainly through markets and how fruit is in demand or it's not, will often just kind of just be dumped in fields because it's easier than trying to dispose of it elsewhere. Maybe the food or the fruit, you know, rain damage or it's too small, it's not fit for market. And so we're trying to solve for these two things and also create a beer. So Coles basically has helped put us in touch with some farmers, some growers. Our first surplus sour was a watermelon. So we've got fresh watermelon all the way from Queensland. We got it saved from, you know, being thrown out, juiced, sent down. We've got some leftover sourdough bread. And we had some test cases already with the fruits of our labour sour with Burnley, and we basically put it all together, and that was the first brew, and now we've just launched a white peach sour as well.
I could think of easier ways to make beer than trying to get all these ingredients from there and the bread. And all. What's the process with the sourdough bread to get it from its original form to be able to make a beer? You're not like just lobbing loaves of bread into the mash tun, are you?
It's not too far off. Basically,
maybe you mix it up. Or
we chop it up, basically.
I'm imagining you with a lot of those serrated knives, you know, the bread knives, just you and the rest of the team. Is that basically it?
It's literally that.
How many loaves of bread in a brew?
Well, originally we had 10% of the grain bill as these leftover sourdoughs. I think now we're up to 20% we're playing around with. So originally now you're testing my specs of our, I think we did the 40-hec batch. So I think I picked up about 50 loaves of sourdough bread.
Oh, right, okay. I was doing numbers like hundreds or something of loaves. That's okay. You can handle that.
Yeah, well, look, we're hoping the more we brew, the more bread we can save. We're building up. That was a temp, so we've doubled that for the next batch.
Yeah, okay. And so the watermelon. Well, you're just breaking shit, aren't you?
This is a tambourine. I'll just get that on camera.
This is all man of many talents.
Theater of the mind, Chris.
And so the first one was the watermelon sour, and you basically made it with Coles, and then was that exclusively sold through Liquorland? Is that sort of the deal?
That's right. So that deal's kind of exclusively through Coles. So we've got the watermelons. We've got the white peach sour and the mango is coming out next. And
I really like the idea because you're partnering with the big guys to make a bigger difference. Because I correct me if I'm wrong, but when the original idea was with every four pack, you provided a meal, but now you're effectively timesing that by four because of this arrangement. Is that how that works now? You're making four meals per.
That's
four pack.
Yeah, that's right. So part of that agreement, Chris, exactly right, is to kind of up that commitment to Second Bite. And now for that surplus sour range, it is every can, which is so good. Hopefully a long-term vision for the rest of our beers. But we've got to be a sustainable, profitable company for the rest of our core range. But this was a kind of constrained, release that we were able to commit to that. And
is that kind of how you're doing it? The core range is propping up the sustainable sales program. Is that sort of how it works?
Not exactly right. I mean, it's all tied into to each other. I'll have to get the finance guy on too.
Give me the marketing guy. I want to be able to answer these hard questions. Hopeless. Where are you, Nick? Get on here, Nick. Yeah. He dished me tonight.
He did. We'll call him out actually on the podcast. Nick Campbell, where are you?
Hopeless. Gives me a phone call. We're jumping on at 8 p.m. tonight. He's given me a phone call at about 7:58 to say, I can't make it, mate.
It speaks volumes about the professionalism of this organisation, Chris, doesn't it?
I think you're better looking than him anyway. So
wouldn't be hard, but
well done. Hugo, the eye candy. So you've made quite a few sours now. Are you sort of getting very well known for those? Was that something you were aiming to do, or is it because of the relationship with the spoiled and, you know, goods that you're reusing that you had to go that sour route, or you guys just, you know, mad for sours as beer fans?
Whether we follow trends or we like to think we're
trailblazers again.
Trailblazers. I think we have the answer to call ourselves trailblazers. But whether we help create the trend, we certainly knew that XBAs were something that was popular, and we wanted to be part of that. The same with the sours.
You're just basically running through Instagram and seeing what's getting posted about lots. Following a hashtag, let's make a beer of that hashtag.
Look, we'd be the only beer company, Chris, that would do that and try and predict trends.
Market research.
Look, we did enjoy drinking sours, and we're also the company that is such, you know, young and green that we're like, hey, this is a thing. We want to do this thing. How do we do this thing? Let's do it. So we wanted to create our own sour, and then that surplus sour or using leftover bread, the sour seemed to be a good fit for using that bread and having the fruit in there as well. It kind of came together with that style more than any other.
Yeah, nice. I like it. Look into the future a little bit now. Because you sort of things have settled down, things are going well. You've struck up these great relationships, and you're providing more back to your cause, which I absolutely love. The next step is obviously wanting to have your own home, tap room. Now, I read that back in early January or whenever it was, you started to talk about this thing, and I've got to be honest with you, mate. I struggled to find too much more than the initial announcement. I'm not. Having a go, but I really wanted to know what's going on, because I've seen a really awesome painting, but a painting does not make a tap room. What's happening with your tap room?
A painting does not a tap room, mate.
No. That's it. That's what I'm trying to say. You're well educated, far better than me.
Chris, good call out. And
thank you are right. Hard hitting.
There was plans. There are plans that we very much hope will materialize very soon for a tap room. Cool. We always, the plan was to always have a home for this brand, and to have a place and a space that people could come to and have a beer fresh off the tap that we, you know, freshly brewed. Again, that kind of flu thing that went around, I'm not sure if you, do we mention that before? has thrown a bit of a spatter in the works. That as well as, again, trying to like get anything through council. I don't know if anyone's
I've heard they eating. Can be a little bit difficult every now and then.
And I don't want to call out any council in particular, but look, it was.
You are going into Collingwood, so that's.
Yeah, people can do their own research. No,
they can do their maths.
They've got a process, and we had to follow the process. That was a lengthy process, as a few people in the area of Clifton Hill, where we have a space, and we're very much hoping that will be our home to build, decided that they didn't want a loud, raucous pub in their neighbourhood and brewery without us actually ever saying we were any one of those things. We wanted to be a neighborhood space that people could come to and enjoy and still do. So once we got through those hurdles, we then found out that COVID had affected the supply and the cost of materials for building.
Oh, wow.
I must say that our original quote was almost 100,000 more than what we budgeted for. And so we're now at a stage where we're trying to find more money. Chris, do you have a spare $100,000 lying around?
Can't say I have. I'm about to do a house renovation myself, so I know what's going on. You know what you should do? All of you, all the founders, should just go and get pregnant now, just to throw another spanner in the works to make it even more difficult. Throw a couple of kids in there for everyone.
I just got married, mate. Don't speak too loudly. Shout out to my beautiful wife, Olivia, if she's listening. That's all right.
She is. She's a big fan.
She's a massive fan. She listens every week.
In terms of location, though, a great location to be, because Collingwood, in terms of beer areas around Australia, Collingwood's one of the ones that, you know, spring to mind immediately. So probably about six or seven of them in there now. So nice place to be when you do get there.
Yeah, we definitely were thinking front and foremost of being a part of a community already.
Nice.
That's the old thing. If you want to sell used cars, open up next to a used car dealer. Is that a saying?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think it's something like that, yeah.
I think it's something like that. But we have some amazing – Craft & Co. is just around the corner where we brewed our first beer. The Mill Guys, Molly Rose, making amazing beers. Of course, like you've got this, the Stomping Ground Station. Rodrigue. Yeah. I mean, it is a community there.
On and on and on. It's great. And you've got the Collingwood Beer Trail. You've got to be part of that.
Well, exactly. That's a dream to be part of that. Extend that trail outwards. We're literally just the other side of, and then some great, let alone pubs and independent venues like the Fox Hotel, basically a 2-minute walk from where we are. So we really loved being part of this community. We found that space and we thought we'd make a great home and hopefully get Clifton Hill, the first kind of place you would walk down from Clifton Hill before you got to that Collingwood kind of, you know, beer trail would be us. And look, hopefully, fingers crossed, by the end of the year, we'll be up and running. Chris, you can come down and get a fresh one off the tap.
You know, I'm in Tasmania, so I've got to come up.
Yeah, come. That's right.
But anyway,
I wish I had a weird response to that. But
no, you got nothing. You got nothing. I was wondering whether maybe this idea of having the tap room, being it's going to be a community space, and that sort of thing, does that further help your cause in terms of what you can give back? Like the one, you know, it was 1 mil per 4-pack. Now it's with the Surplus Sour series, it's one mil per can. Is there a similar sort of thing you can do once you have that home there?
I think it just allows us to do so much more. I mean, beer from kegs is, for a start, just so much more environmentally sustainable, which is a big part of what we do. It also allows us to be able to, you know, have a venue that has, you know, solar panels. It starts to investigate, you know, really interesting ways to save on energy or carbon, or, you know, we're really fascinated with people like Crankshaft making beer out of insects and Young Henry's, their algae program with the CSIRO. I mean, we just want to be able to kind of investigate and maybe think outside the box as well. And just have a space to tell our story. So, I mean, and as well as keep that commitment to Second Bite and tell their story as well, and our commitment to them and, you know, every pint as well with a meal to someone in need.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. How are you going to build that sense of community in the venue? Have you got thoughts around whether you might be, remember back in the day when the little creatures in Fitzroy first started up and they allowed mums to come in for mothers' groups with prams and, you know, you got any wacky ideas around like that?
Well, I'm a big trivia man. I used to write and host for Quizmeisters. So we want
you,
to
you get... strike me as the type. Yeah.
Question number one, Chris. so just a place that we would have something on basically every night. But also we were trying to think maybe in like a Dungeons and Dragons group, book club can meet here. That's
right. You didn't just say Dungeons and Dragons, did
Look,
you?
We have.
Inclusive, sorry.
Jesus. We have our barista, which currently at 3 Hilton Street, that venue currently has a pop-up coffee shop running, and a big shout out to Charlie and Wes, who are our baristas there. And Wes, big fan of Dungeons and Dragons, and he would love to have a night there at the brewery. And I think we can have enough of the community.
Well, I should get him on the podcast. I would really love to talk for 45 minutes about Dungeons and Dragons.
I don't know where to start. Sarcasm
I wouldn't know where to start. I'm sorry. Oh, God.
But that's the whole thing about a community, Chris, though,
yes,
isn't it?
We're all diverse,
aren't
we?
We're all diverse. We're all different.
Yeah, and we can get those nerds out of their bedrooms and into a community space to talk to people.
Exactly.
Brilliant.
Or just talk to each other and buy beer. Yeah. That's what we want.
Yeah, okay. No, fair enough.
Look, we're very much open to how we can best engage with the community. I would love community groups to come down and use our space, and that's kind of how we'd all imagine the space to be. Big question though, Chris, and imagine, like, put yourself in our position. You're in the kind of Collingwood area, you're in Melbourne, so big footy crowd. Do you put TV screens up? Do you put the footy on? Or do you just say, no, look, we're like a venue that highlights and champions beer. We're not a pub.
If you are going to invite Dungeon Dragons people to come and nerd up the joint, you've got to put the footy on, I reckon. I think it could be everything for everybody. Like I love I'm a massive sports fan, massive. I've been off with the COVID this week and I've watched so much ESPN. It's been great. But I love the sport, but I also see it's not for everybody and it's not for all the time. So my thought with TVs in venues, they can be on, I'm not going to say special occasions, but they're not on all the time, but they can be utilised. So if you have a day where, say, Collingwood's playing at the MCG, to sell out.
Turn it off.
I think it's nice. If you can gather a following of people that are going to come there and be a sense of community around that, I don't see that being any different than a sense of community around games or having, you know, the local theatre club or music or anything like that. It's just a different interest, but I could see why people would want to not have them at all because it's a slippery slope. Once you put them in and turn them on, and it's all of a sudden they just get extended. I'll just leave them on all the time. I don't agree with that for every venue. Some venues, like sports bars, no dramas. But I think you should have at least one so that people can come and have a pint, help somebody out, and watch the Pies.
Well, I half agree with you there, mate. But it's not
the answer you wanted, was it?
No. Look, I think we actually are going to implement exactly that. But it is tough because you can't please everyone. You can please.
No, true.
You know what? Some people all of the time, and people some of the time, but you can't.
What if you came up with a creative way? You know how you got like the Samsung TVs these days that turn into a piece of artwork. What if you got something that became like the cover for the television, which might be made by the guy that's designed your other artwork?
Yeah, Ben Ross. Yeah,
you could put over the top of it when it's not in use, and then people wouldn't even ask about it because they don't even realize.
Yeah, look, well, we're on the same wavelength there.
I'm on ideas, man.
A projector screen is what we're kind of thinking. And if anyone's been to Dog OG, they just literally project on their back their back wall. And it would be possibly something like that. But it's kind of interesting. There's an 80-20 rule. I'm not sure if you heard that you spend.
I've heard of that before,
yeah. You're a smart man. and this is an example of the 80-20 rule, I think, where you spend 80% of your time thinking about TVs or in our case as well as a company, T-shirts, how many T-shirts should print and some of the other really big decisions just kind of get done and moved on. But T-shirts and TVs in venues, we could talk all night about those.
What about music? Because you said that they were a bit hesitant to have you be rowdy in there. What's the deal with music?
Yeah, we've had a few sound engineers in. I think we might be able to get through some music. I don't know if live music, I think it's still kind of being decided.
Yeah, so okay.
Very diplomatic answer.
Yep, yeah. What about one man from Tasmania with his ukulele? Would that be okay?
Depends how loudly you were playing that. Well, actually, not you, but if someone with skill could come up and play.
Yeah. No, I can play it, but I've got no skill. Yeah, I'd be real quiet because I'm rubbish.
Although, that could be a piece of performance art in itself. You know,
yeah, it would be amazing. I did some amazing stuff during COVID where I sang very poorly with a ukulele. We're not going to repeat that, so might just put that one away. Let's talk big picture for you. Where is this thing going to go? You know, do you and the brew partners, I don't know, want to be as big as, say, Stomping Ground, or are you happy with having, you know, a brew pub with maybe a small kit for, you know, stuffing around on and, you know, doing brewery only type brews? Or do you have really big dreams that this might, you know, be next level?
Look, I'd be lying if I said that we were kind of happy with where we are, and at one point we'd say this is enough, because we're, you know, swing for the fences sort of mentality. But at the same time, we don't want to stray away from our ideals and our goals, and our vision when we started was to have great beer that made an impact. And if at any point we were sacrificing one of those things, that would, I think, cause us all to come together and really think quite heavily about who really is this in line with what we want to do? Because I think we've made a pretty strong commitment to that. So I don't think it's too far away from us, and I think we could have visions of opening up a production facility. That's certainly on the cards, and maybe other tap rooms in other localities that could have, again, that same kind of local impact, and maybe, you know, also have a relationship with local sporting clubs as well as, you know, Second Bite to have an impact where those venues were. But look, we're kind of, again, there's that building that plane as you fly it. Like, let's wait and see how we're going. Let's see if this COVID thing is going to be good. Yeah. But certainly we want to be around for a lot longer. We want to keep doing what we're doing and make an impact, and we'll enjoy the ride.
Yeah, I like it. It's doing some great stuff for the community. You're brewing great beer. You guys obviously sound like you're having a lot of fun. It's bloody exciting. Yeah,
can we just say that first? This is the most fun industry. If you're ever thinking about getting into the brewing industry and beer industry, look, it's hard work. It's not great if you want to make money unless you're really, really good at it. But, geez, it's a lot of fun. You meet some great people.
Good people, isn't it?
Great people, the best people.
Yeah, no, they're awesome because everybody's just so passionate. I feel like you're passion on passion, you guys, because you've got that craft beer passion, then you've got that passion on top of that, which is helping you do good for other people. It's quite infectious. And, mate, I've really enjoyed having a chat with you about this tonight. I wish you guys all the best for the future. And thanks for helping out your old mate Nick last minute. But I think you were way better than I ever dreamed he was going to be on here.
Well, absolutely. He does owe me as well. So if you are listening to this right now, which is the only time you can really listen to a podcast, is right now the time you're listening to it. Or anything, really. Should we start again? Well, let's pick up again. So I was going to say that we are at Gabs. We either will be or have been at Gabs, depending on the time this is released and you're listening to this. So if you listen to this before you, we are at Melbourne Gabs, please come down. We'll have a giant wheel. We love the wheel. The people love the wheel. It's a giant spinning wheel. And if you've missed us in 2022, then don't worry. We will be back in 2023 and beyond. And Sydney, Melbourne, who knows, maybe even a few more locations. Some definite other festivals we'll be doing around the country as well. And look out for our new limited brews. I'm not sure, Chris, have you had the Milky Wave arrive for you yet?
It is with me. I have not tasted it because I can't taste anything right now. So I mean, once I'm back on board, I'll be straight into it.
You want to savor the full flavor. So we've just released.
Yeah, I've actually got nothing right now. So.
Yeah, save it for when your taste comes back. We've got an oat cream IPA that we've just released. We have a red velvet chalk stout coming out as well.
Hello. Nice.
And a few. We've got Yeah, exactly. So our core range we're very proud of, but we've started to really amp up our limited range. So look out for those.
Exciting stuff. Well, I would like to say it was great seeing you at Melbourne Gabs, or I look forward to seeing you at Melbourne Gabs. So depending on when I get this thing out. But, either way, mate, this has been awesome fun tonight. Thank you for joining me, and cheers to great beer, and cheers to doing great things with craft beer. You're doing awesome stuff. Well done.
Thank you, Beerhead. Thank you, Chris. Thank you to everybody. Localbrewing.co is our website, and at localbrewing.au on the socials. So please give us a follow.
Awesome stuff. And it's fucking Beer Healer, not Beerhead. What are you doing? Beerhead.
Beer Healer. What is Beerhead?
I don't know. this was loose. It was great.
Sorry.
Thanks for listening. I really hope you enjoyed the episode. If you have an interesting beer story and want to be a guest on the Beer Healer interviews, send me a message via my Facebook page. And once again, if you want to help out the show, a simple rate and review on Apple Podcasts or a follow, like, or share on any other podcast service will do the trick. I'll catch you soon.